Thank you for joining us today for Bring Out the Talent. My name is Maria Malfa, and I am the CEO and president at the Training Associates.
And I'm Jocelyn Allen. I'm a talent recruitment manager here at TTA, and I'm thrilled to have you join us here.
So we're very excited to have David Horning join us today. David is a keynote speaker, consultant, comedian, and founder of Water Cooler Comedy. He has a degree in political science from the University of Akron, over 8 years in comedy, and a passion for bringing humor to the workplace. David spent years living in New York City and studying comedy while performing in improv comedy clubs. His sketch comedy show, Laundry Day, was selected for the New York Comedy Festival. After being floored by the fact that only 1 in 3 people are engaged by their work, David decided to leave the city to set out on a mission to disrupt workplace culture as a leadership speaker. David's mission is to transform workplaces by inspiring culture shifts that make work more meaningful, more human, and most importantly, more fun, so that both leaders and employees alike can be more engaged and productive. His mission to find the humor in everything has culminated in his new podcast titled You Can't Laugh at That, which explores elements of stand-up comedy to discover perspectives that can make even the most offensive or cliche topics funny. David is a leadership speaker who packs his programs with laughs that will transform your company culture and change your perspective on leadership and on humor in the workplace. Wow, David.
And that is all the time we have here today. Man, I gotta cut some of that.
Yeah. Just stop doing stuff.
I know, but it's obviously a great review on your talent and experience.
Absolutely.
A little inside baseball here. I wrote that, so.
Yeah, David, so thank you so much for joining us. As Maria said, we're big fans of yours over here. You conducted a webinar with us that was a ton of fun. As an attendee, I can tell you that I did laugh the whole time. And we just want to tell our listeners a little bit more about you. You've been a comedian for over 8 years. Like, what brought you to this place that you're at now?
Yeah, I mean, the natural progression from political science to comedy, there's not that much of a gap there. I've always found joy in making other people laugh. Being able to do that in dark circumstances when people are going through, you know, negative life experiences, and being able to bring a smile to their faces, you know, that's kind of where it all started. And then just the idea that this is a skill that people can learn. You know, I'm obsessed with human behavior. I love exploring why people do what they do, and instead of really focusing on what they did, I want to dive a little bit deeper into that. And learning that humor is a skill that anybody can call upon, whether you're funny or not. I want people to learn the same skills that I've learned in being able to find humor and dig deeper into any given situation. And so speaking and, you know, performing comedy, obviously that's that instant gratification, that dopamine hit right away by making people laugh. But I've gotten into speaking and consulting and training because I want to teach people those same skills to think like a comedian before acting like a leader, because it changes how you lead, the way you look at things first and foremost.
I think that's a brilliant idea. I know you reached out to me originally on LinkedIn many months ago, and I do get a lot of messages through LinkedIn. And oftentimes I don't have enough time to get back to people, but because I am so passionate about having a fun and engaging workplace where I hear laughter all day is just so important to me. So I got back to you right away, David, and we had some phone calls, and we were excited to have you conduct a webinar. And as we can see, it resonated with a lot of people because we had over 950 people register for your webinar. And we've had a lot of webinars on very interesting topics over the last year, but this was by far the most well-attended. Just want to read a few words. Build trust. Enhance problem-solving skills. Reduce employee absenteeism. Increase company loyalty. Prevent long-term burnout. Improve productivity. Burn calories. Increase happiness. Increase perceived leadership skills, build competence and abilities, bring creative skills into the workplace. These are some of the incredible benefits of bringing humor in the workplace, but yet still so many companies do not embrace this philosophy. They feel like, we can't have fun. You know, what is this, like a joke? We have to work here. All of those positive attributes. Why do you believe that leaders don't want to have fun in the workplace?
It's uncomfortable. It's fear. It's new. It's, you know, breaking up the status quo. It's so much easier to maintain the way things are. And doing something that's outside of the box, there's a risk that it might not work. But the ultimate irony there is that taking those risks and making those mistakes help us learn faster. And when you do it using a sense of humor, when you're able to laugh when you fall on your face, it rallies the people around you because it humanizes yourself. It level sets you as a leader. And now you have a tribe of people who are looking to make this work. So not only can you get to the right solution faster, that's the irony to me in it. Not only can you do that, but it brings people together. It builds that trust. It creates that buy-in. And it all starts from that place of fear. And I think a lot of it has to do with the questions that we ask ourselves, right? From a leadership position, usually the question is, well, should we do this or shouldn't we? And there's only two answers there. Life is way more nuanced than that. And that's what I love about comedy is comedy explores the nuance. It explores the gray. It explores, you know, it goes beyond the judgment thinking, the binary thinking, the this or that way of thinking. So instead of asking the question, well, should we or shouldn't we use humor in the workplace? The question that more people need to ask, and that's why I do what I do, is to challenge people to ask this question is how? How can we do it? How can we do it based on our culture, on our people, on my own personality? How can we combine all these things and make this a possibility? Because the answers of that question, there are so many different ways to answer that question. That can be overwhelming too. There is never just one right answer. If only life were that simple.
Yes.
But that would make life boring.
Yes.
And we want to explore that complexity.
I know when I was a guest on your podcast a few months ago, you posted it. And we did get a interesting comment where a gentleman said, I didn't realize that leaders were not allowing people to laugh in the workplace. It's not that leaders do not allow laughter in the workplace. I don't think that, you know, rarely happens in today's work environment. But the difference is making laughter a very integrated part of your culture, that you actually do a lot of things to make people laugh.
Speaking of which, I have a very important question to ask based on all of the key points or the benefits to using humor in the workplace. So you say burn calories here. How many jokes does a person have to tell to get into a bikini by summer exactly?
That's the burning question.
I think we need metrics here. David, with your expertise, if you could please share your thoughts.
Right. Don't cancel the Beachbody subscription. Don't throw out the treadmill. But the physiological reaction of squeezing air out of your lungs, I mean, that's good for you. Mm-hmm. And also the chemicals that it unlocks in the brain too. And those are the most important health benefits for me, is that, you know, if you're stressed out and then you can, you know, that moment when you finally realize it's okay to laugh at whatever the situation is, like that feeling, that just kind of wave of relief, like that's endorphins, that's, you know, that's dopamine. If you're with other people, it's oxytocin. If you're the one making other people laugh, that's serotonin. And those are the chemicals that combat stress, which makes you healthier. So organizations that incorporate fun into work, if I'm going to flip this into what I talk about, organizations that do that, they see fewer sick days being taken. They see more productivity. They see more motivation because those feelings and those chemicals are released in your people's bodies. And those are that's the cocktail that we want people to have while they're at work.
Yes.
That brain cocktail.
I know sometimes laughing so hard, I experience the feeling of just doing about 500 sit-ups.
Yeah.
When your stomach hurts a lot.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. And the cheeks.
Yes.
Right? And the cheekbones. Cheeks. That's my thing. That's how I know that you've got me. It's like when my cheeks start to get sore.
Skip your crunches. Right. Check that off the list. We've worked out today.
Yes. Right. I think the biggest thing that we're talking about here, when to bring it in, how to bring it in, is the fear that surrounds it. So how does an organization effectively bring humor into their workplace if it's something that they haven't necessarily explored purposefully before?
It really depends on the organization. I always say, you know, you can't change the leopard spots, right? So if you're somebody who is nose to the grind, loves working stressed out, but you're interested in this, my advice to you is don't try to be funny, because once you start trying to be funny, first of all, nobody likes the person who tries to be funny. It may even betray people's trust if you go from that, like, all business all the time to suddenly you're cracking jokes. Where did this come from? So I think a lot of it has to do with finding those people that work with you already who are surrounded by laughter, who are the ones who are, like, willing to you know, take a risk and tell a joke and it eases the tension, or those people that bring the sunshine into the office. Lean into those people. And that's one reason why a lot of organizations don't incorporate humor. It's like, well, you know, I don't have time, or I'm not funny at all, or people don't laugh at my jokes, or I'm not creative, I'm an analytical person. You can still appreciate humor. So lean into those people who are already using humor, and maybe, you know, give them the task of coming up with a few activities they can do. I always say active themed days, things like a dad joke Wednesday, where people bring their favorite dad joke and then we vote on it over a Slack channel or something. And at the end of the day, you know, whoever has the best dad joke wins something. And it's just, you know, shared experience like that. So, you know, it's like what works for you, what works for your people, what works for your company culture, your mission, values, and how can we, you know, what's one step you can take at a time? Not like try to do it all at once. What's one step that you can take, and how can you lean into the people who are already doing it?
So. Yes. I love that idea about the dad jokes.
And prizes a dad bod
suit. That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Dad bod Tuesdays.
we try to do your mama jokes. So we were actually talking about that earlier. My favorite your mama joke is, your mama's so stupid, she puts a quarter in each ear and thinks she's listening to 50 Cent.
I've never heard that one yet.
So good.
So, Jocelyn, you have a favorite your mama joke?
Oh, favorite one. Your mama's so fat, her belt size is equator. Okay. I also am a big fan of dad jokes. I'm not going to lie. I have a dad. Yeah. And he's full of them.
Dad jokes are pretty innocuous, too. Like, they're pretty harmless for the most part. Yes. So, you know, if you're worried about, oh, this might cross the line, always abide by your company's values, yes, your culture. Like, so if what you're about to say doesn't fall in line with that, maybe skip it. I was talking with I spoke to a group yesterday, and one of the questions was, you know, how do we incorporate humor without crossing the line? And so I asked her in response, you know, what her company's values were, and one of the first things she said was accountability. And I said, see, there it is. If somebody tells a joke and it offends somebody else, they have that accountability where they can say, oh, that was my bad. Or when that person comes to them and says, I didn't appreciate that, now we have this basis of accountability that we can start from and talk about what happened and how to do it better next time. So, you know, what value does your company have that you can use as a platform to start from when it comes to using humor in the workplace?
So do you think your mama jokes are not appropriate?
It depends on the culture. Okay, it seems like with TTA, they are appropriate. Okay. Though. So knowing you, knowing what I know about you, I feel like it fits the culture.
Yes. I feel like your mama's our safe zone.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We're like, dad jokes, please. Yes. Leave it to the grown-ups, kids.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, we try. It's definitely not like inappropriate. But
sure. And in a culture like that, too, I feel like if someone were to approach someone and say, hey, you know, that joke kind of offended me, I feel like there would be more of a conversation versus somebody digging their heels and in defense and getting ugly, which is a fear of a lot of people. But but if you have a culture where you value one another as human beings first, like, I feel like there's you're more likely to have a more constructive conversation about that. That's the way I look at it as a comic too, is it's not my job to tell you what does and doesn't offend you. Like, that's not my business. If it offended you, I can't say, well, yeah, that shouldn't have offended you. It's mm-hmm. Now there's a conversation, like, if somebody comes up to me after a show and says, you can't laugh at that, which is the name of my podcast. There's a reason for that. I like to ask questions in response. Like, how can I approach this differently? Because I didn't see it from that angle at first. And of course, the intent is always to make people feel good.
Yes.
You know, it has to start from there. If you're malicious in your use of humor and you're cutting people down, it's like, that can have disastrous effects.
No, absolutely.
You were talking earlier about when leaders are looking to effectively place humor in their organization, but maybe they're not the funny guy. So yeah. Looking to the people who are surrounded by the jokes that they maybe hear making them and alleviating stress. So something that kind of came to mind for me is, what if that perception to that leader is always that that's a goofing off? You know, how do you change that perception when you think that humor in the workplace is going to completely transform a certain organization's culture?
Is it having an impact on results? Is, you know, are you not getting your work done? Being able to point to numbers, leaders like that tend to value numbers more than anything. And I mean, that's a good place to start in that conversation, where it's like, well, I'm getting my job done. I'm, you know, other people are getting their job done. Having that sense of morale and camaraderie, I mean, it's all about making a connection with that leader. So what is their perspective here? How can I meet them where they are and then work backwards to what we're doing? If you are having fun at work and your leader's like, hey, probably don't do that. You know, it's all about knowing your audience and meeting your audience where you are. And I always say, you know, you can't perform for the audience you wish you had. You have to perform for the audience that you do have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, saying, oh, I wish my boss were different, that changes the way you approach it. I've worked for some crappy bosses before, and it's always taken me time, but I'm always the one who, like, I toe the line. That's always been my place in an organization when I work for other people. And, like, how can I toe the line but also be very likable? Well, I have to get in this person's mind first. So, you know, figure out what works, what doesn't work, and play that line and get to know them on a human level too. So one thing that I tell people to help them work with a difficult boss is, imagine yourself as a character on a sitcom about you, all the other people you're dealing with. Like, so let's say it's like a workplace comedy, like The Office. Your boss is just this person who lacks self-awareness, doesn't allow certain things that would be beneficial for the workplace. They're acting against their own self-interest constantly without even realizing it. That's a character on your show, and you are the main character. So the main character has to find a way to overcome those obstacles. So using my strengths as a character, my knowledge, my experience, how can I connect with that other character? It changes how you look at other people instantly. So instead of dreading them, it's like, oh, here's Michael Scott again. Like, what's he going to do tonight? Just having that simple shift in perspective, it changes how you feel about the person. It changes how you approach them. It changes how you talk to other people about them. It changes how you talk to them. Like, little things change. Body language, your posture becomes more upright without you even realizing it. If you like a person, rather than, you know, you're kind of like guarding yourself if you don't. And that creates a subconscious mental barrier. So it's a simple reframing can make all the difference in how you approach a situation.
It's a very cool way to think about it, to insert yourself into your own sitcom. Totally relatable. I think that's a very cool way to
look at it. Yeah, you're just clenching your teeth like, right? I love that.
Yes.
Yes. So happiness is a byproduct of laughter, right?
Yes.
And we all see all the stats and data on how much more productivity you get from employees when they're happy. So it's mm-hmm. interesting that more companies haven't embraced that, but I do feel that, like I mentioned when we had your webinar and had so many people sign up from a lot of very large Fortune 500 companies, you could see that, you know, people are realizing, just like with mental health and wellness, you don't come to the office being a different person. You're the same person. You don't leave, you know, one brain at home and walk in with another one. So, you know, it's very important to have your employees feel appreciated, feel engaged, feel like they're able to take risks, which is also a byproduct of having, you know, humor, not taking yourself so seriously in the workplace.
Do you find the same thing, David, that a lot of organizations are kind of ready to make the shift, or do you still find that work isn't the place to laugh?
They're definitely open to making the shift. Yeah. They're looking for ways to engage people. And, you know, then COVID happened and priorities shifted. You know, how do we connect virtually? How do we make sure people are protected and safe? And so employee engagement got put on the back burner for a little bit because, you know, we had to make this big shift. So now I think that organizations are looking for ways to engage their teams. But here's the thing is we have years and years of data on engagement studies and years of data on workplaces that embrace humor. And the results are there. But it's just a matter of overcoming that mental block, that fear that, oh, if we make work the time and place to laugh, then there's not a time and place to work. So it's just a matter of overcoming that mental block. And I mean, Stanford is offering a course in their graduate school business about humor in the workplace. I mean, more and more organizations are valuing it. There are more training programs. There are more workshops. I'm working with a company that does stand-up comedy training as part of their onboarding. So everybody that works there has gone through this comedy training where they do a set by the end of this training workshop. And what they found is it creates a sense of buy-in, immediate trust for new employees, because everybody's been in the same boat. Even the people who are terrified of getting on stage and speaking in front of people, when you see a room of people who have gone through that same experience, it creates instant bonding, instant trust. And they've seen positive results. They're able to, they have an edge in recruiting when it comes to getting creative talents, because now creativity is a skill that's so highly valued in the workplace. The company that allows their people to have fun and go through this interesting onboarding experience, or the rival company who's just like every other company, who are you going to go with? You're going to go with that company where you can see that your creativity will be valued. More and more companies are warming up to the idea, but it's the matter of taking that first step. And there's three options. You can keep doing things the way you've been doing them, which is the death knell for a company. Like I have a joke where, because I'm an optimistic person, I'm super like, something happens, I'm like, okay, let's find the silver lining in this. And there's all these new technologies that are coming out that are scaring people. I'm optimistic about it. I'm just worried about those people who are resistant to it. Like this guy came up to me after a show one night and he goes, psst, you want to buy a GPS? All right. Number one, mad respect, man. This was 2019. You're trying to sell a GPS in 2019. That is an entrepreneurial spirit. Number two, never start a sales pitch with psst.
Yeah, right.
Right? Unless you're selling a hiding spot.
Yeah.
And then number three, I don't need a GPS because I already printed MapQuest directions to Blockbuster. And I tell that joke because like MapQuest and Blockbuster were super relevant 10, 15 years ago, and now they're totally obsolete because they kept the, well, we've never done it that way before mentality. And so that's the value of humor in the workplace, is humor allows us to pivot quickly so that when we are faced with an unexpected adversity or we are facing uncertainty, being able to laugh creates that instant perspective shift where you're now seeing things from a different point of view. You know, when we laugh, I like to say it's our brain's way of saying, oh, never looked at it that way before. Because all of a sudden, you know, you're being taken to a different place. When a comedian delivers a joke, when we figure out a punchline, the punchline to that joke, and it makes us laugh, same parts of our brains lighting up as when we solve a problem. Mm-hmm. So solving problems and joking go hand in hand if the joking is done in a productive way.
I love hearing the examples of these corporations using these laughter workshops for an onboarding program. we do that less formally, but that's a great idea.
It is a very cool idea. I think the onboarding kits at TTA should come with tomatoes.
Just in case. I know. I'm actually, it's funny because I'm working on a few ads right now. We're looking for a few different people to join the company, and I'm thinking that I probably do not have enough humor written into that. I know, like, we'll do a couple little jokes here and there, but that's definitely important to do.
We should ask their favorite dad joke.
Yeah.
Right?
We can.
As part of the, right? Yes. Please give us your favorite dad joke. Then offer letter will come with feedback on how we can improve.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it, too, is it's not like, you know, they don't have to be funny. It's just having that appreciation for a sense of humor. So the willingness to even take that risk and tell that dad joke. Like, that's a great interview question.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, just to kind of break up that status quo, but also to kind of introduce them to what kind of culture you already have.
So a constant theme, as we've been talking here, is about leading with laughter and how it affects your culture. And we are dealing with a back-to-work force post-pandemic. We're dealing with people who are very not interested in even coming back to work across the globe, I think. Mm-hmm. A workplace culture could be contributing to the reason why people don't necessarily want to be ready to come back to work.
Right.
So why are your thoughts that way? What have you seen that contributes to this, and how would workplace humor possibly solve that issue?
I have a long history in the service industry, and that's an industry that has been fundamentally changed by what's going on right now. And I went into that industry looking at it as a survival job, but I was lucky enough to work at a restaurant with a leadership team that allowed us to be creative, that allowed us to think outside of the box and the way we solve problems, that was very open and embraced the idea of just being able to laugh together and laugh openly and often. And it changed the survival job into a place that I ended up working at for almost 5 years. What that did is we had the same front of house staff for over 2 years, which is almost unheard of in the service industry. It created a camaraderie. And when you're around people that you look forward to seeing, when you're around leaders that you look forward to going above and beyond for, it creates that intrinsic buy-in, that intrinsic motivation where at an organization like that, people will recommend and refer their friends and family to go, you know, come work here. This is a great place to work. I have fun there. It doesn't necessarily have to be service industry. It can be anywhere, you know. Are your people leaving and telling their friends and family excitedly about their job? Or is it just another day, another dollar? You know, what kind of mentality are you imparting upon your people? And humor plays a role in that, because an organization that is open to using humor is also an organization that is open to allowing their employees to be creative. And when we're able to be creative, we're operating from a place of creation, which kind of feels like, oh, that's obviously makes sense. What that means is when you're in a state of creation, when you're in that creative mindset, you're not stressed out. You can't be both at the same time. Like, you can have that kind of excitement, which can almost feel like stress, but you know, that's that feeling of flow where at the end of the day, it's like, holy hell, like 9 hours just went by. That's crazy. This is a real look in the mirror moment for a lot of leaders. Is are your people leaving work with that mentality where they can't wait to come back tomorrow, even though, yeah, it's still a job? You know, do you see them going above and beyond for one another? Do you see them going above and beyond for you? You know, if one person's work is done, are they just on Facebook scrolling, or are they going to help somebody else? Like, there's all these little quantitative measures that you can kind of look at, these quantitative behaviors that you can look at to really tell whether or not you're cultivating a culture where people want to be. And now, as we're getting back to work, people are kind of self-examining and thinking, do I want to come back here? I mean, we just faced this crazy disruption, this thing where it kind of had us question our own mortality to an extent. Do I want to work at a job where I feel like I'm wasting my time, where they don't value me? Or do I want to look somewhere else where, you know, they have a better reputation? They're on that best places to work list. The number of people that I've spoken to. So before I give a presentation, I'll reach out to the group and I'll ask, you know, to be in contact with individual members. Maybe that's a bit of selfishness on my part because I'm a people person and I can't like network in person. So I'm just like, I get to meet with people on my computer and make new friends. But a few of them have talked about how, you know, I've been with this company for 8-9 years. They've taken care of me, but now with this going on, I just have so much more on my plate and they're not providing support. Now I'm really questioning the fact that I'm working here. So after this and after things get back to a sense of normalcy, do I want to stay here? And that's not a place we want our people to be. So it's really important to, and one of the most important parts of using humor is the ability to think beyond just the surface value, to look beyond and ask what else could be true, what else is true here. And this is a real genuine opportunity for leaders to lean into that, ask open-ended questions of their employees, and really listen to that feedback and adapt to it and kind of self-examine.
I had no hesitation coming back to in the office at TTA for that reason. I'm somebody who very much values my workspace and how I'm getting things done. So it wasn't even just about, that was part of it. It was, you know, this is my space and now the kid can go back to daycare. I can have my time away. I can have my space again, all of that stuff. But it did become about the genuine human face-to-face connection too, to the point where now we have people adding days to the weeks that they're coming in on the office because they heard that Tuesday might be the really fun day, you know, things like that. So I just, Maria, to give you a shout out, hasn't mentioned that she's a hilarious human being and literally has us going all day long laughing and giggling with the songs and the dances and the activities that she likes to provide for us. But there are days where I don't want to miss out on that. And I'll push myself further than I would just because being a part of the culture is so important and so amazing. And it just speaks volumes about people who are willing to put in the work to create that space for their employees because you reap the benefits long term. I have never wanted to work so hard for an individual in my life just because of how supported and comfortable I am. And I know I am not the only person that feels that way. I can say that because we just recently won again for the however many years in a row, third year in a row consecutively.
2 years, Boston Business Journal, 1 year, Boston Globe.
Okay, so there we go. So 3 total years of being one of the Boston best places to work, voted anonymously by all of our internal employees. So I know that I'm not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that you're doing that too. You're like incentivizing people to come back to work through the activities and the shared experience that you're creating. Now, I have a question for you. Are you giving people, I mean, it sounds like you're giving people the option if they want to work, stay at home and work or come in the office or do a little bit of both. Is that right?
That's a good question. Yes, we are giving everybody the option. So it's obviously a, you know, personal preference and, you know, some people have safety concerns. Sometimes it's a matter of childcare, but people can elect.
That autonomy, though, that's one thing that people are really looking for. And so the fact that you're giving them the freedom to choose, do I want to work a flex schedule? Do I want to work strictly from home? Do I want to come into the office as much as I can? That is an example of giving them that option so they have that sense of ownership, too.
I think people actually get more work done at home. And I think it's because I'm the one who's disrupting them during the day. true story. Right? So often I find myself like trying to tell jokes and people are looking at me like I'm on the phone.
the old Michael Scott. You're bringing that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I love my people. So, you know, we have like, we're crazy about hiring the right people and having the right culture fit because that's one of the most important things that I've learned over the 27 years is there's no replacement for somebody that's not a culture fit. Like it just, right. It disrupts the organization. Mm-hmm. So culture is definitely king and you have to, as we talked about, have humor and fun written right into it.
Right. Until you came along, David, I thought that funny was just funny. But then you told me that there are actually many different types of humor that exists in the world. And more specifically, that there are 4, I think you mentioned, that you find most effective in managing the workplace or integrating into the workplace. Can you talk to us about what those are?
Well, there's 2 that are more beneficial. There are 4 styles of humor. There are 2 negative styles, 2 positive styles. And each of us is kind of predisposed to one of those styles. There's a survey somewhere where, you know, people can take and figure out what kind of style of humor that they're more predisposed for. But the two negative, the one is aggressive humor, which is, you know, sarcasm. It's cutting down somebody else to make yourself feel better. There is a self-defeating humor, which is different from self-deprecating humor. Self-defeating humor has other people feeling bad for you. It may start from a place of self-deprecation, which we could all use. We could all, you know, laugh at ourselves a little bit. But if that laughing at ourselves doesn't serve as a springboard to learning and adjusting our behaviors, then it can be disruptive. So self-defeating humor is not a positive humor style, just because it has people feeling worse after you're done doing it. Inverse, yeah, you don't want people feeling bad for you and sad. Like that's. But on the inverse is self-enhancing humor, which also can include self-deprecating humor, because, like I said, it's kind of the setup to a punchline, which is kind of a solution to a joke. So being able to laugh at your own behaviors and use that as a starting point for learning and growing can make your mistakes feel a little more palatable and also humanize you to the people around you. And then affiliative humor, which is being able to make connections between unlike things to ease tension. For example, you know, I use a story in my presentations that, you know, I used to work at a job where literally one of the policies handed down by the owner was not to tell people they're doing a good job, because if you tell people they're doing a good job, they're going to stop wanting to work hard, which is so funny to me, because it's like there are so many studies out there where it's right. Like appreciation makes people work better. But I digress. So it was that was the kind of culture we were dealing with there. The one day somebody dropped a tray full of drinks and everyone stopped what they were doing and laughed. It was a super stressful shift too. So, you know, it was like the worst timing for this. But everybody stopped what they were doing and laughed. Yes. And it was that moment that we needed to kind of cut the stress and break up the tension and like, oh, we're going to rally together and get through this shift just like we get through every other shift. And the one boss just comes in and yells, this is not the time or place to laugh. But I worked at a comedy club. So by definition, it's that's both the bad time and place to laugh. And so I noticed this and it made me laugh. And then I shared that experience with some of my coworkers later in the shift. And then, you know, we laughed again together and, you know, got us through the shift together. So it's connecting those unlike thoughts where, you know, there's this angry boss and normally that would make us feel bad and we'd go back to work stressed out, walking on eggshells. But in this case, finding the irony in that situation. So that's an example of affiliative humor where it's used to uplift, where it's used to make observations and ease the tension. So affiliative self-enhancing, yes. Aim for those. You can start from a place of self-defeating or aggressive humor as long as it ends with that positive outcome.
I'm glad you said that, because my favorite form of humor is sarcasm.
Yes.
So I, you know, and I, to yeah. be honest, I think that that's probably a lot of people's, you know, sure. it's an easy kind of thing to do. I mean, at least for me, I don't know if that's exposing more about myself than is necessary. But what ways would you say that sarcasm can be appropriate?
There's a number of factors that come into play. The intent, you know, do you want the other person to feel better? Or are you trying to cut down? If you're trying to cut down, that behavior needs to stop right now. The intent is key. The audience, so who are you being sarcastic to? Is it somebody that you banter with back and forth sarcastically often? Or is this somebody that you've never cracked a joke in front of before? You don't really know them that well. So kind of, you know, you got to kind of get to know your audience. When I get on stage, I like if I just walk in and I'm the first comic up, I haven't had a chance to see how the audience is responding to other comics' jokes. I'll do a couple easy, simple jokes to kind of feel where the audience is in the room and then kind of meet them where they are and then mentally change my set according to their response to those jokes. So know your audience, the intent, and again, you know, the outcome here is to make them feel better. So if you can start with sarcasm and then pivot that into self-enhancing or pivot that into a more affiliative style of humor where you're like making connections or you're finding an uplifting punchline at the end of it. Like there's any number of ways to do it, but I think those are the three things you have to look out for. You know, the one question I tend to question myself a lot, like ask myself questions that really evaluate where I am, if what I'm going to do is right or wrong or whatever. But asking that question, is this going to make their day better? Even if you even pause for a second to think about it, maybe reevaluate.
So David, as we're ending our podcast today, I would love for you to tell us a little more about the workshops that you conduct.
The goal of these workshops, first and foremost, before we get into the nitty gritty, is to shift people's mindset, is to think like a comedian before you act like a leader. And what I mean by think like a comedian is to question the surface value of everything, is to step outside of yourself and ask yourself, how would somebody else look at this? Is to realize that no matter how tough the current situation is, there is something funny there, even though you might not know what it is at first. So it's starting to shift to that mindset, because that's not a way most people think. Most people, you know, we're taught to think very judgmentally, where, you know, this is bad and that it's bad because of this, rather than it's way more complex than it just being bad or good or unfortunate or tragic or so on. You know, I always ask the question, well, I always have people describe 2020 in one word, and then the following question is, well, what was one way that you grew as a human being because of 2020 that you wouldn't have otherwise? My first goal is to teach people how to consciously start to reframe their state of mind. And we do that through hands-on activities, a lot of self-reflection, a lot of communication, just kind of a stream of consciousness exercises where people talk together. And just like that company that does the onboarding, it's Peppercom, by the way. They're a marketing and communications agency out of New York. What I want people to do in these training programs is to root for one another and to support one another and to be willing to be vulnerable and share their perspective, because we have to start from where we are to get to where we want to go. And if we can incorporate a mindset shift, then that's the first goal that I have. So, you know, first training you do with me is all about creating that mindset shift, and then we'll build on that skill and go from there. I want to teach you all the skills at once, and I have to try my damnedest to not like try to, this is a problem that I constantly have, is I pack my presentation so much where I'm like, I have like 10 other things I want to say and there's 5 minutes left. Focus on the mindset first and foremost, and then we go from there to develop the acting like a leader.
Well, thank you so much, David, for joining us. This was a lot of fun. My cheeks hurt, so mission accomplished. And thank you once again for joining us on Bring Out the Talent. We hope to see you again soon.
Hey, you know where to find me.
I do. Thank you, David.
Of course, it's my pleasure.
For more information on today's podcast guests and how they can help your organization, please visit www.thetrainingassociates.com.
Bring Out the Talent is a Mudhouse Media production.